Now Yahweh said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid nor be dismayed. Take all the people of war with you and arise, go up to Ai. See, I have given into your hand the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land. And you shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king. Only its spoil and its cattle you shall take as booty for yourselves. Lay an ambush for the city behind it." So Joshua rose and all the people of war to go up against Ai. And Joshua chose 30,000 mighty men of valor and sent them away by night. And he commanded them, saying, "Behold, you shall lie in ambush against the city, behind the city. Do not go very far from the city, but all of you be ready. Then I and all the people who are with me will approach the city, and it will come about when they come out against us at the first that we shall flee before them. For they will come out after us till we have drawn them from the city, for they will say, 'They are fleeing before us as at the first.' Therefore we will flee before them. Then you will rise from the ambush and seize the city, for Yahweh your God will deliver it into your hand. And it will be when you have taken the city that you shall set the city on fire. According to the commandment of Yahweh you shall do. See, I have commanded you." Joshua therefore sent them out, and they went to lie in ambush and stayed between Bethel and Ai on the west side of Ai. But Joshua lodged that night among the people. Then Joshua rose up early in the morning and mustered the people and went up, he and the elders of Israel, before the people to Ai. And all the people of war who were with him went up and drew near. And they came before the city and camped on the north side of Ai. Now a valley lay between them and Ai. So he took about 5,000 men and set them in ambush between Bethel and Ai on the west side of the city. And when they had set the people, all the army that was on the north of the city and its rear guard on the west of the city, Joshua went that night into the midst of the valley. Now it happened when the king of Ai saw it, that the men of the city hurried and rose early and went out against Israel to battle, he and all his people, at an appointed place before the plain. But he did not know that there was an ambush against him behind the city. And Joshua and all Israel made as if they were beaten before them and fled by the way of the wilderness. So all the people who were in Ai were called together to pursue them. And they pursued Joshua and were drawn away from the city. There was not a man left in Ai or Bethel who did not go out after Israel. So they left the city open and pursued Israel. Then Yahweh said to Joshua, "Stretch out the spear that is in your hand toward Ai, for I will give it into your hand." And Joshua stretched out the spear that was in his hand toward the city. So those in ambush arose quickly out of their place. They ran as soon as he had stretched out his hand, and they entered the city and took it and hurried to set the city on fire. And when the men of Ai looked behind them, they saw, and behold, the smoke of the city ascended to heaven. So they had no power to flee this way or that way, and the people who had fled to the wilderness turned back on the pursuers. Now when Joshua and all Israel saw that the ambush had taken the city, and that the smoke of the city ascended, they turned back and struck down the men of Ai. Then the others came out of the city against them, so they were caught in the midst of Israel, some on this side and some on that side. And they struck them down so that they let none of them remain or escape. But the king of Ai they took alive and brought him to Joshua. And it came to pass when Israel had made an end of slaying all the inhabitants of Ai in the field, in the wilderness where they pursued them, and when they all had fallen by the edge of the sword until they were consumed, that all the Israelites returned to Ai and struck it with the edge of the sword. So it was that all who fell that day, both men and women, were 12,000, all the people of Ai. For Joshua did not draw back his hand with which he stretched out the spear until he had utterly destroyed all the inhabitants of Ai. Only the livestock and the spoil of that city Israel took as booty for themselves, according to the word of Yahweh which he had commanded Joshua. So Joshua burned Ai and made it a heap forever, a desolation to this day. And the king of Ai he hanged on a tree until evening. And as soon as the sun was down, Joshua commanded that they should take his corpse down from the tree, cast it at the entrance of the gate of the city, and raise over it a great heap of stones that remains to this day. This is the word of the Lord. Well, let's review what's happened so far in the book of Joshua to set the context for our passage tonight. Joshua has replaced Moses as Israel's human leader. To prepare for the conquest of the promised land, Joshua led the people to the Jordan River. And at the height of flood season, the Lord miraculously caused the river to stop upstream so that Israel could cross on dry ground. This echoed the deliverance of Israel from Egypt through the Red Sea and sent the message that he would be the one to grant them victory over the inhabitants of the land. This was powerfully displayed in the fall of Jericho. At Yahweh's instruction, Israel simply marched around the city bearing the Ark of the Covenant for 6 days. Then they circled the city 7 times on the 7th day and shouted on command, and when they did so, the walls crumbled. All of this looked more like a religious ritual than a military attack, and its success was another reminder that the Lord would give them the land. In this holy war, Israel was charged to destroy everything and everyone in Jericho. The only exceptions were Rahab and her family, who had been promised deliverance, and silver, gold, and vessels of bronze and iron, which were to be consecrated to Yahweh for his treasury. The victory over Jericho was encouraging to Israel. With new confidence, they sent out a small force to attack the smaller city of Ai. But as we saw last week, they were routed by the Aites. When Joshua poured out his heart to the Lord about this, it was revealed to him that sin in the camp had led to this loss in battle. Specifically, someone had defied the holy war commands and had taken spoil for himself that was supposed to be devoted to the Lord. And through a mysterious sort of series of events, the Lord identified the perpetrator as Achan, who was subsequently treated as Jericho had been treated and was destroyed, he and his family and all that belonged to him. The sinfulness of sin and the importance of obedience to the Lord were thus vividly communicated to all Israel. And they were also memorialized to future generations in the memorial made of stones piled upon Achan's body and the naming of the place as the Valley of Achor, the Valley of Trouble, for Achan had troubled Israel. So Israel has gone from a high in victory over Jericho to a low in their defeat at Ai. And that is where we find them as we enter chapter 8. We're going to consider this passage under 4 headings tonight. First of all, instructions for battle in verses 1 and 2. Secondly, preparations for battle in verses 3 through 13. Third, the battle of Ai in verses 14 through 23, and then aftermath of the battle in verses 24 and 29. Instructions for battle, preparations for battle, the battle itself, and the aftermath of the battle. We begin with the instructions in the first 2 verses. During the first attack on Ai, that's recounted at the beginning of chapter 7, Israel was under God's wrath for the sin of Achan. By way of contrast, chapter 8 opens with the assurance that the sin having been dealt with, they have been restored to God's favor. Verse 1 begins, "Now Yahweh said to Joshua, 'Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed.'" After the fiasco of the first attack on Ai, Joshua surely needed such words of divine encouragement. Fear would have been natural under such circumstances, but the Lord called Joshua to adopt a supernatural perspective. With Yahweh on his side, there was no need for fear or dismay on the part of Joshua. The command continues, "Take all the people of war with you and arise, go up to Ai. See, I have given into your hand the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land. And you shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king. Only its spoil and its cattle you shall take as booty for yourselves. Lay an ambush for the city behind it." Let's break this down a little bit. He's told, take all the people of war with you. This is quite a contrast to that first attempt in battle when they took only 3,000 men. Now their whole fighting force is to be engaged. Then he said, "See, I've given into your hand the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land." There is a divine assurance of the outcome of this battle. The king, the people, the city, the land of Ai, all of it is going to be a gift of the Lord to Israel. I have given it to you. And then Joshua was told, "You shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king." This is a reminder that this is another case of harem warfare or holy warfare. No one is to be spared. Only its spoil and its cattle you shall take as booty for yourselves. So there's one significant difference here between this and Jericho. This time the people can take spoil for themselves, including the cattle. See, God was gracious. The limitations on the Jericho attack were not going to apply to the attacks on all the city in the land. There was going to be the opportunity for them to take some of the spoils of battle. And then where he's told, lay an ambush for the city behind it. Unlike the taking of Jericho, the taking of Ai would involve real military maneuvering. And we get a glimpse of that battle plan here. We know that it's going to involve an ambush from behind the city. And it was most gracious of the Lord to speak these things to Joshua, who needed to trust that sin had been dealt with and that it was time to move ahead according to the Lord's direction. That brings us to preparations for battle in verses 3 through 13. The overall battle plan is clear, though some of the details can be a bit confusing. Soldiers are going to be sent for an ambush behind the city, and after they're in place, another force led by Joshua himself will begin a frontal assault on Ai, just as happened during the first attack. And when the Aiites respond, this force will flee in order to draw them out of the city. And when that happens, then the ambush will be launched from behind and the city will be taken. So that basic plan is clear enough. There are some questions about numbers and timing. According to verse 3, Joshua sent 30,000 men away by night to prepare the ambush from behind the city. But then we read in verse 12 of Joshua sending 5,000 men to send an ambush to the west of the city between Bethel and Ai. And a straightforward reading of the text makes it look like this took place the next morning. So some were sent at night, some were sent the next morning. There's a question of how to understand this, and there's basically two options that have been put forward. It could be that two ambushes were set, one involving 30,000 men, and then another to complement it in some way of 5,000 men, and somehow they, in conjunction, were to set that ambush on Ai. Or it could be that the force of 30,000 mentioned in verse 3 is really the total attack force, and the 5,000 mentioned in verse 12 are the ones that were sent for ambush. Some scholars think that verses 9 through 13 are a sort of flashback to verses 3 and 8, revisiting them and giving them more detail in the way that Genesis 2 is a flashback to the sixth day of creation in Genesis 1. They also note that a force of 30,000 would ordinarily at least have had a difficult time hiding around a city with only 12,000 inhabitants. But of course, if the Lord wanted to do that, the Lord certainly could. According to the scholars I consulted, and I'm no Hebrew expert, the Hebrew text can legitimately be interpreted either way, and I found Reformed commentators taking each of the views. Whichever is adopted, the basic storyline remains the same, and that is what we want to focus upon. Now, our passage lays out the geography. The main force of Israel is encamped to the north of Ai, on the far side of a valley that lay between them. The ambush force has encamped west of Ai, between that city and Bethel. Thus, we read in verse 13, "And when they had set the people, all the army that was on the north of the city, and its rear guard on the west of the city, Joshua went that night into the midst of the valley." So all the preparations are now set. And that brings us to the battle of Ai itself, as we find it in verses 14 through 23. As the battle begins with a frontal assault and withdrawal, we see the Aiites take the bait. Let's read verses 14 through 17. "Now it happened when the king of Ai saw it that the men of the city hurried and rose early and went out against Israel to battle, he and all his people, at an appointed place before the plain. But he did not know that there was an ambush against him behind the city. And Joshua and all Israel made as if they were beaten before them and fled by the way of the wilderness. So all the people who were in Ai were called together to pursue them. And they pursued Joshua and were drawn away from the city. There was not a man left in Ai or Bethel who did not go out after Israel. So they left the city open and pursued Israel." Now, initially, the account sounds like it's going to be a repeat of chapter 7. Once again, the Aiites are pursuing the Israelites. The very same verb for pursue is used in both places. But what looked like it was going to be another Aiite success, actually turned out to be their defeat. The pursuit of the Israelites left the city vulnerable. Verse 17, there was not a man left in Ai or Bethel who did not go out after Israel. So they left the city open and pursued Israel. Now, the mention of Bethel here comes as a bit of a surprise. We know the ambush forces were encamped between these two cities, of which Bethel was the larger. And so it appears that Bethel sent their forces to defend their Aiite neighbors against the Israelite attack. But that left Bethel just as vulnerable as Ai. Now, the focus, as the passage goes on, remains on Ai, but the narrative may imply that both Ai and Bethel were defeated by Israel at this time. It is notable that we have no other record of Israelite attack on Bethel during the conquest, yet the king of Bethel is listed as among the kings defeated by Joshua in chapter 12, verse 16. So that defeat may well have happened along with the defeat of Ai. We can't be certain about that. But with the Aiite and the Bethelite forces drawn out of the city or cities, it's time to spring that ambush. We read in verses 18 and 19, "Then Yahweh said to Joshua, 'Stretch out the spear that is in your hand toward Ai, for I will give it into your hand.' And Joshua stretched out the spear that was in his hand toward the city. So those in ambush arose quickly out of their place. They ran as soon as he had stretched out his hand, and they entered the city and took it and hurried to set the city on fire." At Yahweh's command, Joshua stretches out his spear in his hand toward Ai. This is both a signal to begin the ambush, as well as an assurance to Joshua that Yahweh would give Ai into his hand. And we know from verse 26 that Joshua stretching out his spear was not just an initial act in this battle. Verse 26, "For Joshua did not draw back his hand with which he stretched out the spear until he had utterly destroyed all the inhabitants of Ai." Now, does that remind you of something else earlier in the history of Israel? It's a reminiscent of an attack that took place after the Exodus from Egypt. So I'm going to turn to Exodus chapter 17 and read verses 8 through 13. Exodus 17, beginning with verse 8. This is right after the water from the rock incident. "Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, 'Choose us some men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand.' So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he went let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became heavy, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword." When Moses raised his rod, it was clearly a sign of the Lord's presence with Israel against the Amalekites, for if he lowered it, the battle went against Israel. Similarly, when Joshua raised his spear, it was a sign of Yahweh's presence with Israel against the Aiites. While military might and strategy was involved, it was the Lord who gave the city into the hands of Joshua. And this connection also shows us another way in which Joshua is being portrayed as a worthy successor to Moses as Israel's leader. In the battle with the Amalekites, Joshua had been on the battlefield. He was the one leading the forces while Moses lifted his rod. And now in the battle against the Aiites, Joshua takes the place of Moses as he lifts his spear and others go into battle. But in both cases, the Lord granted the victory. Joshua is as a new Moses to Israel. Now, returning to our story, the ambushing force has set the city afire. The Aiite forces looked back and they saw the smoke and they realized that they were trapped. And what we see is the battle goes just as it had been planned. We read verses 21 through 23. "Now, when Joshua and all Israel saw that the ambush had taken the city and that the smoke of the city ascended, they turned back and struck down the men of Ai. Then the others came out of the city against them. So they were caught in the midst of Israel, some on this side and some on that side. And they struck them down so that they let none of them remain or escape. But the king of Ai they took alive and brought him to Joshua. That brings us then to the aftermath of the battle as we find it in verses 24 through 29. Israel's battlefield victory was complete. All the enemy forces were killed save for the king of Ai who was brought back to Joshua. Following this, the Israelites returned to Ai and destroyed all its remaining inhabitants. A total of 12,000 men and women were killed altogether, according to verse 25. Now this was this harem war, this holy war, and yet it was somewhat limited in this case because Yahweh did allow them to take spoil for themselves, including livestock. Nevertheless, after the people were destroyed and spoils taken, the city was committed to destruction. Verse 28, so Joshua burned Ai and made it a heap forever, a desolation to this day. Several times throughout the book we have this is still happening to this day. To this day, the time the book was written, you could have gone and you could have seen the ruins of Ai. So finally, Joshua dealt with the king of Ai. Verse 29, and the king of Ai, he hanged on a tree until evening. And as soon as the sun was down, Joshua commanded that they should take his corpse down from the tree, cast it at the entrance of the gate of the city, and raise over it a great heap of stone that remains to this day. Now we can note several things from this verse. We know from other sources that this practice of exposure was known both in Assyria and Egypt as a wartime practice. But that wasn't all that was in Joshua's mind. Joshua was following the practice given in the law for the exposure of criminals who were put to death for capital crimes. I'm going to read that law in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 22 and 23. If a man has committed a sin deserving of death, and he is put to death, and you hang him on a tree, his body shall not remain overnight on the tree, but you shall surely bury him that day, so that you do not defile the land which Yahweh your God is giving you as an inheritance. For he who is hanged is accursed of God. And so that law was applied in this case to this king. They're now in the land that the Lord is giving them. They don't want the land to be defiled. And so after his exposure on the tree, he is buried under the rocks. And as Deuteronomy indicates, this hanging on the tree was a sign of being accursed of God. And later on, we'll come in Joshua 10 to see that Joshua uses this same practice on the five kings of the Amorites. We'll get to that in chapter 10. And as was done with Achan, the body of the king is covered with stones that serve as a memorial to future generations. In this case, it is a memorial to the victory that was granted by Yahweh. Now, a number of lessons can be drawn from this chapter. The Lord's power and His covenant faithfulness are on display. The importance of obedience on the part of His people is exemplified. Joshua's position as successor to Moses is solidified in the way this victory echoes the earlier victory over the Amalekites. I leave you to consider such things. I want to focus on two matters of application tonight. And the first is that there is always a fresh beginning after sin has been dealt with. There's always a fresh beginning after sin has been dealt with. Joshua 7 narrated Israel's failed attack on Ai, showing their defeat to be the consequence of sin in the camp. As a result of the sin of Achan, 36 Israelite soldiers were killed in battle, and Achan and all that was his suffered harem destruction. They were treated like the Canaanites. It is a sobering account, and it surely left a great impression upon all Israel. However, once sin was addressed, it was time to move on. Yahweh doesn't want Israel to wallow in past failure, but to move on to new victories. This is signaled in the first verse of chapter 8. Now Yahweh said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed. Take all the people of war with you. Arise and go up to Ai. See, I have given into your hand the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land." Now how can we apply this in our lives? Well, in our lives, conviction of sin is a good thing. Conviction of sin is a good thing when it leads us to repentance and a fresh experience of divine forgiveness. But when we have that experience, the next call is to move on. Satan wants you to wallow in past sin. He wants to convince you that because of what you've done, the Lord cannot use you anymore. Satan wants your past sin to paralyze you in the present so that you are ever uncertain of the Lord's love for you. But God wants you to know that His forgiveness is final and His forgiveness is restorative. This truth was communicated in our assurance of pardon in this morning's service. That assurance came from Psalm 103, verses 11 and 12. For as the heavens are high above the earth, so great is His mercy toward those who fear Him. As far as the east is from the west, so far has He removed our transgressions from us. If God has removed your transgressions as far as the east is from the west, He's not holding them against you. There is ever a fresh start, and our call is to believe the Lord and to move forward, trusting that He will continue to lead us in spiritual battles unto victory. With the Lord, there is always a fresh start after sin has been dealt with. We want to remember that. But the second point of application is that Jesus bore the curse in our place. Here is why there is always a fresh start for us. We have read the law's prescription of hanging the body of a capital criminal upon a tree as a sign of God's curse against him. We saw this exemplified in the treatment of the king of Ai. Now hear Paul's application of that law in Deuteronomy to Jesus. Galatians 3, 13 through 14. Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law, having become a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree, that the blessing of Abraham might come upon the Gentiles in Christ Jesus, that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith. In our natural state, apart from Christ, we are no different from Achan or the king of Ai. We are sinners who deserve the curse of God. But thanks be to God that He sent His Son, our King, to be cursed in our place, that we might be reconciled to Him. And as this passage in Galatians tells us, that we might receive the Spirit. When we remember this gospel truth, we may have confidence in our forgiveness and assurance that God loves us and will ever be with us. And this provides the foundation we need for lives of fruitful kingdom service. Because Jesus bore the curse in our place, we may live under righteousness in Him, through Him, and for Him.